Hello and welcome to Celebrating Cinema, a podcast for the love of cinema. I'm your host Sophie, and I'm joined by Kiriko.
Hello.
And Elliot.
Hey.
And that's it today, just the three of us. So today's episode will be a little different than what you might be used to from us, because we are not talking about any films that will be screened at Lab 111. Instead, we'll be focusing on the 1966 film The Battle of Algiers and the function and political power that cinema has in times of conflict.
يصعب للشعب باش يبدا ثورة ويصعب له بزاف باش يوصلها ويصعب له أكثر وأكثر باش ينتصر.
La France doit-elle rester en Algérie? Si vous répondez encore oui, vous devez en accepter toutes les conséquences nécessaires.
But as always, of course, before we jump into that, I want to ask you all what we've been watching lately.
Before I say anything, let me just say that I have a cold. That my voice sounds terrible. So I apologize in advance for lumpy noises. But as I was saying, so this week is ITFA, which is the International Documentary Festival here in Amsterdam, which to me is like a national holiday because I just take the entire week off and try to watch as many documentaries as possible. And the whole thing about ITFA is that they're primarily, or mostly, I would say 90% of the films that they're showing are premieres, but then they also show like a number of documentary classics and like the best of the best. Mm-hmm. And yesterday I saw this film called Time, which is made by Garrett Bradley, and it was released 2 years ago, and it's a black and white film about a couple in New Orleans who rob a bank, and then she gets sentenced like a couple of months and he gets sentenced 60 years. They have four sons and she's pregnant of twins. So it's like,
oh my God,
the struggle of a single mom raising her kids by herself. And then it's a truly like fantastically beautifully made film, and also like such a tragic story. And it has like this sweetness to it. Like, the film basically ends with love conquers all, but it feels so true, you know, like I was very into it, but maybe that's because I'm sick and you just become more emotional. What about you, Elliot?
I actually got around to watching Killers of a Flower Moon.
Ooh,
damn. My friend Martin Scorsese.
And how was that?
Terrible.
Really?
Yeah, I was really disappointed. I was hopeful.
Bummer.
Could you imagine that, Kiriko?
No, like, what? The man, the mastermind himself. No.
Yeah, it was just so dry for 3.5 hours. And I think it was probably one of Robert De Niro's worst performances because there's like no depth to it.
I mean, he's old.
Yeah, he's old, but still the character he's trying to portray, there's just nothing to it.
Is it like a classical Scorsese
martyred man?
Yeah.
No, not necessarily. It does try to focus more on the relationship and love between Leonardo DiCaprio and Molly Gladstone. But it's just very unconvincing. Like, she's supposedly very aware that Leonardo DiCaprio's character has fallen in love with her because of her money, but yet is very happy to go along with that. And then, yeah, it's just...
Okay.
Wouldn't recommend it.
How has it been received?
People really love it.
Really?
Or a lot of the reviews I've read, people seem to like it a lot.
Of course they do.
Yeah. I just feel...
Fuck them all. Yeah.
I was saying to a friend that I think this film would have been... If he had made this instead of Wolf of Wall Street 10 years ago, it would have been way better. But now I think we're just far too familiar with the story of colonialization and extraction
of
oil.
Give us something new.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah.
We know what happened.
Exactly.
Invent something.
Chose to focus on the colonizers instead of the colonized, right? That's what I've been reading about it.
A little. I mean, he tries his best to sort of do two at the same time, but it just doesn't
work.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
How about you?
I've been watching Studio Ghibli films.
Yes, girl.
Because because for those of you who don't know yet, we're having a live Ghibli screening on
20th of December
of Princess Mononoke, which I haven't watched yet, but I've been working my way up to it chronologically.
Really? That's nice.
So I'm watching Grave of the Fireflies today.
Wow. When did you watch up until now?
I watched Nausicaa and what's the other one called? Castle in the Sky. Uh-huh.
That's a beautiful one.
Yeah, those two I watched this week. They were beautiful, for sure. I'm so excited to watch all the rest. I mean, a lot of them I've already seen, but just seeing them again and in chronological order to kind of see how they progressed over time, I'm curious to see that.
And also, like, they're all going to be screened at Lab 111, right?
Yes.
So you'll, like, I've seen most of these films, I think, on videotape as a child. So, like, to be able to watch them on a big screen is, like...
Yeah. That's going to be cool. Well, it's time for our Dear Elliot's cold open debut.
I've always believed that cinema is not just meant to be watched, but to be discussed. Since starting this podcast, celebrating cinema, for me at least, has been a space where we try to understand the films we watch through conversations and not by what people tell us to think. These last weeks, I'm sure we've all been shaken to our core by the horrors and atrocities happening in Palestine and Israel. From our privileged position, we've watched this all unfold through our screens. In some ways, it feels too profound to say, but humanity really has been changed. Not necessarily just by the horrific terrorist attacks of Hamas on October the 7th and the ongoing catastrophic genocide of the Palestinian people, but also our collective failing to take action before it was too late. Haunted by a fear of history repeating itself, I've turned to cinema, not for comfort, but for answers, and maybe even hope. I returned to Italian director Guido Pontecorvo and his seminal film, The Battle of Algiers. For those who may not have seen it, George Bass from the BFI summarizes it as a film that dissects the anti-colonial struggle into its key ingredients, public oppression, organized resistance, and moments of incendiary violence that even Fox News wouldn't show you. Everything from bombed cafes to blowtorch ribs to child soldiers being beaten by mobs. Inspired by the memoirs of Algeria's National Liberation Front leader Sadi Yassif, this 1966 film is an emotionally devastating account of the anti-colonial struggle of the Algerian people and a brutally candid expose of the French colonial mindset. Ultimately, it is the everyday people who are punished by brutal atrocities. Shot in a newsreel style, this fictional documentary, rooted in Italian neorealism, evokes a very visceral feeling every time we witness violence, regardless of which side. On the face of it, Battle of Algiers might inspire other liberation movements for the oppressed, which it did, of course. Supposedly, the tactics of urban guerrilla warfare and terrorism in the movie were copied by the Black Panthers, the Provisional Irish Republican Army, and the Palestinian Liberation Organization. It may also be seen as a film for the oppressor, to understand how to supposedly win this battle. The US Defense Department, in fact, screened this film in 2003 to study the tactics used by the French army, which they would adopt for their own illegal occupation of Iraq. But both sides missed the point of this film entirely. About halfway through the film, we reach a poignant moment where a top FLN leader, Larbi Ben Mahidi, confesses to Ali Lapointe, another rebel fighter, that acts of violence don't win wars. It's the people themselves who must act. Just like Larbi Ben Mahidi mentions, it's not the violence and brutality that sticks with me from watching this, but the people. After everything they've endured, the violence, oppression, and murders, it is the Algerian people we see who take to the streets. Defiant and notably peaceful, unlike the FLN in their efforts, their cries for freedom ring louder than ever. It's the only thing we hear. No music, no dialogue, just this. It is this united collective action that produces one of the most moving endings for me in cinema I've seen. I couldn't help but cry when I first watched this. Why? In that moment, I really felt connected to these people. It's a very human feeling, after all, to wish for nothing but your freedom and peace. Made with all but one professional actor and collaborating with former FLN fighters and local Algerian people, Battle of Algiers really is a film for the people, by the people. Pontecorvo manages to achieve a certain objectivity to the subject, despite his own personal politics, making it undeniable for anyone to watch. For me, cinema itself can be one of the greatest forms of protest, not just by documenting, but by the stories and feelings it creates. It is people together taking action that can inspire others to take their own action in whatever way they can. Even Stanley Kubrick once said, "You cannot really understand what cinema is capable of without seeing the Battle of Algiers." The victory at the end of Battle of Algiers is a victory of the masses, embodied by defiant Algerian women, whose gaze outwards to the future closes the film. When the violence eventually stops, I hope, like the people of Algiers, we continue to return to the streets to fight for the freedom and peace of us all. And I hope cinema continues to inspire us to do so, because it is the people who win in the end.
That was beautiful.
That was beautiful.
Elliott Bloom for president.
Yay.
Yeah, where do we start?
Whoa. Who is the professional actor in Battle of Algiers?
Yeah, that's...
It's the colonel with the sunglasses. But very interestingly, so he was part of the French army, I think, before the Algerian War, but he signed a letter that condemned France's occupation in Algeria. So it's quite an interesting inclusion.
Wow. Yeah. The actor himself.
Yeah, because before he was part of the French army.
Right.
So,
well, maybe we should start off with, I mean, you briefly touched upon it, but for those who haven't seen the film, what is the film about? What does the story tell?
Yeah. So like I said, it's inspired by the memoirs of an FLN leader. The name is Sadi Yassif, and he is Jafar.
In the film?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the head of the FLN, right?
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah, the guy wearing a black shirt, he kind of looks like a movie star already, but he was the one that was part of the FLN. And after they came into power, or after France sort of gave Algeria their independence, these members sort of sought after someone to help make this story, and they chose Guillo Pontecorvo. And the film is basically a reconstruction of events of this time in Algeria between 1954 to 1962, various instances that led to the eventual liberation of Algeria. The film itself, we follow Ali Lapointe, who is sort of like a petty criminal, let's say. He runs these swindles and he ends up in prison. And there's that very haunting moment where we see what we can only assume is another FLN leader being marched through the corridors of the prison, and we see straight away him being beheaded as a form of execution.
Mm-hmm.
And that almost sort of radicalizes. I don't know if radicalizes the right word, but...
So,
for sure.
It radicalizes Ali Lapointe to fight back in some way. And it's sort of how his rise to becoming an important rebellious fighter for the FLN, his character is actually based on a real person. And the ending, for those that don't know, is sort of Ali Lapointe being offered the opportunity to surrender himself, but he says he doesn't trust them, and sort of dies a martyr in some ways because they explode his house that he's hidden away in. But over the 2 hours, you sort of see the struggle between the Algerian people, the people of Algiers, which is the capital, who are living in the Kasbah, which is these very sort of narrow, crammed in spaces, and the interaction with sort of the European quarter, which is a lot bigger, obviously, and a lot grander, and sort of the terrorist acts between the two. The French army's justification for torture, it crescendos to a pivotal moment where a lot of the FLN leaders are murdered brutally, and the French army is sort of content with everything. They think they've beheaded the head of the tapeworm, as they describe it. And then at the end, it's a series of shots. I don't know how they filmed it, because it's all staged, but just thousands of people taken to the streets and crying for their freedom in a very moving way. It's very loud. They're very peaceful in their protests. And an ending we can get to as well, it's also a lot of Algerian women who are at the front of this, which I think is also quite powerful. But that is the film, I would say, unless there's anything you would add.
No, that sounds right.
Well, one thing that struck me a lot about the film was the style of the film. So, as you said, Elliot, it's shot in a way that is very close to neorealism, which is the style of film that was dominating the style of Italian filmmakers post-World War II, where filmmakers would use a lot of non-actors and would just shoot out on the streets rather than studio shoots, which were much more popular before that, and would...
It was like, I sort of have a definition here, but
right.
It was a moral and aesthetic system that sort of brought art and politics together to expose the reality of society.
Voila.
And could bring not about have said social change. Yeah.
Wow.
What's so striking for me about that is that like a number of very famous neo-realist films are like The Bicycle Thieves by De Sica, or Rome, Open City, where you sort of see Italy as the backdrop of this destroyed land or city where people try to go about their normal, regular day lives. And as someone who has seen a number of these films, or as someone who at least recognizes this language, seeing that in a landscape that is, well, let's say not familiar to the European film history that I know, it also in a way reveals the timelessness of such an event of a war. And I would say almost even the how replaceable something can be, and how you look at a story and recognize, oh, I know this story from the past, from before this happened, and from now. Even. And that was, I don't know, like so well done.
Yeah, so I watched this a few years ago when I was studying film, and then we watched it recently, and it hits just as hard, if not harder, by everything going on, that it sort of is both a sad, twisted testament of how relevant the film still is because of how nothing's changed in some ways. But then every time I've watched this, I've still remained hopeful by the ending, because I think what Pontecorvo does really well is, so it's not only neorealist, but he shoots it almost as a documentary style. And it's sort of a series of newsreels. We hear a French narrator who we presume is a news presenter sort of telling us what's going on. And yet we feel an understanding on both sides. We sort of recognize that any form of horror or violence against someone is just humanly wrong. And I don't think Pontecorvo was trying to sort of justify any kind of violence, but more by platforming how it's up to the people to take action. And when they do take action, that's when change happens. And yeah, I think that message still remains as powerful as it did then.
Definitely agree with that, hopefulness. And I definitely think that is because of what you said in your cold open as well, because you focus more on the humanity or the inhumanity of it all instead of the violence, especially that ending scene where Ali Lapointe decides to die, basically. He's not alone when he's hiding. There's three other people with him, and he gives them the chance to leave if they want to, because he doesn't want them to die for him. And I feel that even though they were definitely like fierce supporters of the cause, I felt in that moment that they stayed more for their belief in him than in the cause. And that was just such a human thing, you know, where that hopefulness lives on in all the people that can really keep giving us this hope by fighting for the right things. That was really beautiful to see. As for my experience watching this film the first time, it was very interesting that it was shot, to me, it was very interesting that it was shot in this sort of like documentary kind of style. It made me a bit confused at first.
Just to add, so when it was first, or usually when it was screened, it would have a thing at the start saying no real news footage was used because people would be sort of convinced by that this was real life.
The director is a journalist and documentary filmmaker.
Ah.
So that makes a lot of
sense. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. It made me think of what this style of filmmaking did for me watching these sort of events unfold, because as you said, there are horrible acts of violence in this. And I feel that it's very important that something, anything, didn't shy away from it and just showed us like these are the things that happen in warfare. And it made it easier to some extent to watch it knowing that it wasn't real footage. Because, for example, I watched Five Broken Cameras as well, which is about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. And that was all real footage. And it made it so much harder to watch the violence happening to the point where it made me want to avert my eyes. And with this film, it was in that sense a bit easier to really see what happened, because you know, at least the footage that you're seeing now is not the actual footage. It still makes it horrible, horrible, because you know it actually happened. But yeah, I don't know if you get my point.
I do. Maybe this is a good time to ask perhaps why we think this film works more as a fictional film rather than a documentary, because I think if this was real, I don't know if we would have taken the same feeling away from it, perhaps.
Yeah.
Good question.
I think I can't explain how or why, but I feel that message of hopefulness, it's easier to focus on that instead of the feeling of despair when watching actual footage. I can't explain to you why, but that's my first thought.
Maybe it's also true that I know, at least for myself, I get very opinionated about things very easily. Like, I like to make a stance on things. Whereas when
and we
something,
love you for it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
When something is fiction, you can't criticize something as much as if it were a real person, for example. Mm. So what the film quite successfully does is that, so the FLN, the resistance organization, they commit crimes of terrorism by blowing up cafes and clubs and things like that. Whereas the colonizers are like, well, also blowing up many buildings and torturing a lot of the FLN members. But the film shows both horrors in the same amount of drama, I would say.
Yeah.
And the film is accompanied by this beautiful music by, what's his name?
Ennio Morricone.
Morricone. And he puts the same like melancholic melody on the horrors which are committed from both parties, which also almost forces you to not take a stance on either side, but just acknowledge that human pain is human pain no matter who you are.
Yeah.
And I think if it were a documentary, it would be harder for me to stay, quote unquote, neutral on something like that.
Mm.
Even though it is based on real events. And also, you get away with a lot more drama in fiction than in documentary, I would say. If you put melancholic music on some real events, my heart immediately goes, you're coloring it in too much or something. Yeah, you know what I mean?
True. So Kiriko and I watched it together. It still gave us very visceral feelings. So I think you would sort of gasp every time there was violence happening, and shows you how real it still felt.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want to know a sad story about the director?
Yeah.
So basically he made this film and then it was like criticized by many, but then he also won like a hell of a lot of prizes and got like international acknowledgement for it. And then he made, I think, after this, one more fiction film with Marlon Brando, which was like a big flop. And then after that, he was, I think, just discouraged to make fiction films.
And he only made documentaries
really
till the end of his life. Yeah. Oh.
Gosh.
Yeah. So I guess he also was very conflicted about what is the best way to tell a story.
Mm. But maybe this also leads to another question is, why do you think he decided to tell the story as objectively as he could? Because he could very easily have made it one-sided than the other, or perhaps victimized more the Algerian people in some way. And yet for him, it seemed, and if you look at other war stories or war films, especially of the 21st century, that there's such a bias to them that it almost becomes cliched to watch these films.
Well, he is a literal outsider. He's an Italian, which I think already puts you in an outsider position. Whereas a lot of war films, like let's say Vietnam War films, are, like the big ones are made by Americans.
Yeah.
And therefore, you take a stance, either you're for something or against something.
Yeah. I think there's a point for letting people come to their own conclusions, especially since nowadays we're so often told what to think by a lot of, not only film, but just by the media. And especially film can definitely be used to manipulate, that showing it in such a sort of neutral way is more powerful in a way that you feel like you are the one making the decision for yourself.
And I think if people even tried to question the sort of neutrality or the objectivity of this story, the fact that it was used on both sides for their own reasons sort of shows you just how neutral he was in this.
Yeah.
What did you guys think when you found out how it was used as sort of inspiration for other terrorist or resistant organizations?
I didn't know that until you just said so.
Yeah.
That's pretty sick.
Yeah.
But do you think they missed the point of what he's still trying to say?
I don't know. Somehow the film also really gave me a new outlook on terrorism.
Mm. In what way?
Well, terrorism is bad, you know, like, like that's what you're told and you know that it's bad. But the film also shows that terrorism is truly a last resort for resistance. Yeah.
Mm.
And it makes you understand that in a very profound way, which is a feeling or something I never realized before.
Especially because we're not only told that terrorism is bad, but that it's done by bad people who are inherently bad.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And the film really shows us that, terrorism is a solution to something that has been tried in every other way possible.
For sure. Yeah.
And how we're even talking about it is also a result of media manipulation, because whether you agree with it or not, it's a form of resistance what they're doing. By using the word terrorism, you're sort of already othering them or creating a distance. And even in the film, you see how the commander, the general, speaks to the French media and says that he needs them. And if they want to stay in Algeria, it's up to them to sell this war.
That was such a powerful moment for me. I actually wrote it down amongst my quotes, especially because we were talking about how that general was portrayed in the film, and apparently that there's been some backlash on how he's kind of this suave, cool looking dude. But I think it especially that point where he's talking to the media and they're kind of questioning him on whether he's torturing the rebels, the resistance fighters. And they're kind of sort of dancing around this topic until one guy is like, okay, I'm just going to come out and say it. Are you torturing them? And even though they're kind of criticizing him for this, he's like, you can criticize me for this, but in the end, it comes down to the question, do you think France should stay in Algeria? And all of you have said yes, so then you must suffer the consequences, because this is what it takes for us to stay in Algeria.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it's exactly, to just go back, how we look at it now, the language that's being used in the media to describe one kind of violence versus another, when at the same time as people dying, there's no difference in what it is. There's no justification for it. It's just the people that put a spin on it. But I wondered, so like you said, there was some criticism of how the general is portrayed, why do you think Ponte Corvo sort of portrays him as sort of a, like you said, a cool suave? He's always sort of wearing sunglasses. He seems reasonable. He's cultured. He refers to the French philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre. Why do you think he made this decision?
Which guy are we talking about now?
The commander.
Of the FLN?
No. It's a French commander.
Right.
The one always with the sunglasses.
Yeah. The one actor in the film. But maybe for me, it's realistic, perhaps. Like, at the end of the day, he's also a person and he's grown up in a Western European setting. And so we sort of naturally have a bias, perhaps, to see him in such a certain way. Like, it would almost be too easy to paint him as a sort of caricature of a villain. That we're so used to seeing, whereas this really shows they are just another person with their own set of views.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe that's also the genius of this film, is that it doesn't create characters that you want to blame for pain that is caused. It just shows the mechanics of survival, whether that be colonial survival or survival of your own people. It just shows what it takes maybe in wartime and how it's in a way hopeful but also hopeless, because it also feels as if these means are necessary for it to
I think that's a very good point. I don't think at any point during the film my anger was ever directed to one person or...
No. Especially also because I don't know what he was. Was he general, commander?
Yeah, general.
Any military higher position. At no point did I feel like he was actually, like, in charge, in the sense of... He was in charge of...
There's more. He was there to do
the organization. He's there to do a job, but he's not the person actually in charge of this conflict. Like, he doesn't have any influence. In the end, it's really about the fact that the resistance fighters were trying to get an audience with the United Nations. It's all higher up, you know. It comes down to, again, do you want to keep colonizing a land? Then this is what happens.
So in my cold open, I mentioned how the FLN leader, Larbi Ben Mahidi, in the film goes, acts of violence doesn't win wars. Mm. It's the people themselves who must act. In light of that, do we think in this film the FLN succeeded with their violent efforts or not?
That's a hard one. Because, of course, they didn't, because they were all
killed.
Slaughtered.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then they were the prime inspiration for the people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably without them, the people would not know what it is to resist until the end or something. You need the forefronters so
to
that
start
people
something,
can follow. So this film really got me thinking about other films that sort of have this similar sense of, I would say, timelessness, or showing conflict in a way that it doesn't force you to be opinionated about it, but I would say more so enlightened. I don't know if you guys have any other examples of films that make you feel in a similar way.
Yeah, I can go.
We know you have a whole list.
So Soy Cuba is one. It's by Mikhail Kalatozov. It was also released in 1964. By the way, I think 1960s is probably some of the most revolutionary cinema.
Of course.
Yeah, and I think there's a whole reason for that. But anyway.
Why? Well, why?
Tell us.
It's more just that the 1960s itself is a period of revolution, liberation, resistance. And so it only made sense for film to then be an output for that. And so I hope one day we can return to that.
Isn't that now? Do you think that's now?
It could be now.
I think it's now.
But why do you think it is now?
Because I saw a great film a couple of days ago.
Which film was that?
Occupied City. But we'll get to that later.
Yeah,
tell us about Soy Cuba.
So it's made by the Soviet director. And the really interesting thing about it is It's about Cuba after they've been liberated from their dictator and Castro's in government. And that's Fidel Castro. And he sort of has a much more socialist approach to at least begin with. And so Soviet Union are like, right, let's make some propaganda about this stuff. Let's show how great socialism and communism is. And so they send him to go film. And when he's out there, he sort of realizes a very different reality for the Cuban people. And so it becomes four short stories that first start with sort of the poverty that many of them are facing, and then sort of builds up to guerrilla warfare again. And it's, again, this outside perspective, just being able to show a very human experience that doesn't want you to judge or do anything other than just witness what people are having to go through, but still it ends with another powerful message of hope, of people taking action. And it had a similar effect on me as Battle of Algiers. So it's always a good place to start if you've seen Battle of Algiers.
Hopefulness.
Yeah. You?
Yeah, so the film that I was talking about that I saw a couple of days ago, which premiered at the IDFA Festival, which I also previously mentioned, is the film Occupied City.
In May 1940, Amsterdam was taken over by the Germans. Immediately, they set the clock forward. So it was the same time in Amsterdam as in Berlin. The weather report disappeared from the newspapers. It was now a military secret. All streetlights were turned off. Dutch organizations were Nazified or forbidden. Soon, the Nazis started to ban Jews from parks, pools, shops, cafes and schools, from all public life. Music by Jewish composers could no longer be played. In 1941, they started rounding people up. In 1942, the deportations began.
Which is made by Steve McQueen, who is a great British director who resides in the Netherlands and has now made a 4.5-hour long documentary based on a book that is written by his wife, Bianca Stichter, which is basically an account of the Second World War based on what happened in Amsterdam throughout 1942 and 1945, if I'm saying that correctly. And the film basically moves through the city and stops at locations where either forms of resistance have happened or where Jews were arrested or murdered. Basically, anything that was quote-unquote noteworthy during this time. She has written down all these accounts, and the film is a very, I would say, still movement throughout the city in the past 2 years. And strangely enough, you sort of get an account of what has happened in Amsterdam in the past 2 years, but you also have this sort of uncanny feeling of walking through history, strangely enough. And what the film did for me is that when I walked outside of the cinema, it really put the city in a new perspective for me. And the film is, I would say, it has a very meditative rhythm, and it's very factual. It doesn't really force you to feel or be opinionated about the past nor the present. It just exists in some way, but that makes it very profound in a way that you are able to link the past to the present, which is, I think, something that Battle of Algiers also did. It makes you think about the now rather than the past.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think Occupied City also ends on a very hopeful note about union. So the film ends with a scene of a bar mitzvah, I guess, the Jewish religious tradition, like a coming of age type of deal of a young boy in the synagogue. And then a lot of families gather around this moment, and all these families are from different cultural backgrounds. And it sort of also shows what this city is or what the future may be in a very beautiful way, and how one religion can exist alongside the other, or how something that has been oppressed can now live freely in a way. I thought that was
Like a union of oppressed races coming together, and which again was a feeling of hope rather than I think that's what people tend to forget. I think, and again, to go back to Battle of Algiers, they mention it. They're sort of discussing tactics in the war room, and it's, they're very much like divide and isolate and conquer. And I think that's very true to now, of how we're sort of made to see everybody's struggle as their own and only their own, and by that we become more divided. So another one as well, for different reasons, is Come and See by Ellen Klimov. And it sort of follows a child's perspective during the Nazi occupation of Belarus. This film was made in 1985, and you just witness so much brutal horrors, and you're seeing it from a child's perspective. And there's something about that just makes it all the more innocent. And again, you sort of aren't made to pass judgment, but more to experience what is happening, and again, recognize that human feeling inside of yourself of just how there is no justification for what you are seeing.
Okay. I found one film. It came to mind immediately, but I forgot what it was about exactly. It's called What the Soil Remembers. It was a short sort of documentary film that showed at IFFR this year. And it's about the traumatic effect that displacement had on residents in South Africa. And sort of, it really relates to what you've both said already. He really portrays the community there and how they sort of miss the community they had and that they've lost because of this displacement, because they've all been sort of scattered. And they're talking about the days that they remember just being this one big family, sort of, and how, it just relates to how this power is in scattering people, making you feel like you're suffering on your own, and then coming back together to sort of regain that sense of community and the power that you lost, that you can only do that together.
Okay, so I have one question about this conversation. So like all of these films, like they sound so important to watch, but like talking about them, we're not really selling them necessarily, I would say. It's not like, let's get cozied up and watch a film. And you know, it's not something you would go for on your Friday evening.
Yeah, it feels more like a duty, like doing your duty.
In a way, yeah. But But I feel like truly enlightened by having watched Battle of Algiers. But I didn't necessarily have a good evening. Know what I mean? How can we bring the message across that people need to see this or see films like this? Why is it important?
It's a good question. I guess similar to what I said in my cold open, perhaps we often see cinema as a way to escape, right? And a form of comfort, when I think really it's the opposite. And even though these films are hard to watch, it's not like we've come out of them hopeless and full of despair. And I think despite everything that we're sort of made to see on our screens in other mediums, whether it's the news, social media, that is full of despair, and it's depressing, and it's it makes you feel lonely. And I think film has the opposite effect, but still using the same subjects, the same tools. And I think watching these films, you're reminded of why we should be hopeful, but not necessarily a naive, lazy optimism, but more a sense of an idea or some kind of blueprint of what we can do from watching these films. It's like a way to educate yourself, not necessarily just on what other people are going through, but on what you can be doing that you perhaps don't realize.
Yeah,
very well put.
I absolutely agree with that. I definitely feel that looking at social media and the news, all these things, it makes me indeed feel very lonely, but also really makes me feel like there's nothing really that I can do. And these are the smallest things that you can do, watching these films, making sure that history is not forgotten, that the people who have suffered are not forgotten, and going forward from that together.
And like, if we think about these films in a communal sense, they're meant to be watched together, right? Cinema is meant to be watched together. And when you watch it together, that then, again, being in that space where you're sharing the experience with other people, you're immediately inspired to do something. I think if films like this are given the importance to be shown at times like these, then people are perhaps more inspired and more united to want to take some kind of action, whatever that may be, rather than watching it at home, let's say.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even like a conversation is already a form of action, of course.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think that's why we decided to do this episode, as hard as we think it is to talk about it, because yeah, what can you say that's not been said? What can you add? But then
yeah, but staying silent is even worse.
Yeah, exactly.
Or find a way through cinema or other means to understand what truth you believe in a way also.
Yeah.
And I would say that the power of The Battle of Algiers, amongst all the other films that we mentioned, is that fiction offers something that reality cannot do, which is an alternative reality.
I've always thought it heightens reality, right? And it brings to light some of the things we perhaps can't see straight away.
Yeah. And it moves you in a certain direction rather than being at a standstill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's also not for us to tell you what to think. It's up to you to go and watch this, decide how you feel about these films.
Do watch them if you get a chance.
Absolutely. Yeah. And talk about them with someone. Because maybe sometimes you don't immediately know what to think of it, and then helping, it helps to talk about it.
It definitely gave me a new perspective.
Yeah.
Shall we end it there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If our conversation has sparked your interest in The Battle of Algiers and you want to watch it on a big screen with the community surrounding you in the way that it was intended, if you're listening on Spotify, vote on our poll. If we get enough votes, we'll get Lab 111 to show it for you, and you'll have the opportunity to watch it on a big screen. So vote. And of course, make sure to share this episode on whatever platform you want to share it on to get more people to vote, so you have a bigger opportunity to get to watch The Battle of Algiers on the big screen. To continue this train of thought, and if you would like the chance to talk with us about the power of cinema, you can join us on the 20th of December for a screening of Studio Ghibli's Princess Mononoke, followed by a live podcast recording. The link to buy your tickets is in the show notes. Then, of course, if you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on whichever platform you're listening on and share so more people can find us. Make sure to subscribe and stay up to date with all new releases. If you want to join the conversation, feel free to send any questions at celebratingcinema@lab111.nl and follow us at lab111 on Instagram. As always, we provide show notes, including all films mentioned at celebratingcinema.com. This was a Lab 111 production, edited and produced by Elliot Bloom, with music from Hugo Emmerzaal and artwork by Studio FFF.